which, again, like getting $1 million, is not exactly the thing that you achieve overnight, because it does require exactly that, selflessness.
Right.
What's the path? Because that's a big, and having admitted already that you're not there necessarily yourself, how do you describe the path to get there?
It's funny you should ask, because I've been thinking about it too. Because I would like to get to that level, and I've been thinking about what is it going to take me to get to that level where I'm able to not make the mistake of looking at other people's mistakes. That I'm able to sit in a spot where I'm just, that everyone's mistake is my mistake, and everyone belongs to me, and I'm not talking about it, I'm not thinking about it, I'm not getting irritated about it, I'm not rejecting people, none of that stuff. And so the first step, I think, is faith. The faith, and in this case, two kinds of faith, is faith in the other person, in their own goodness, in their goodness, and that one faith. And the next faith is in my own greatness, or my ability to be able to effect change, to able to transform in that state. That if I'm able to sit in that state, actually transformation happens not only within myself, but everything around me. And so that faith is very, very important.
Well, because you raised Hitler, I'll bring Hitler back. Because the idea of providing that level of forgiveness and faith in humanity against the true evil that Hitler perpetrated seems beyond the reach of anybody, especially if we are having this conversation in the middle of the final solution. So, you know, where's a line, if there is one, where you draw and say, well, this, not this time, not with this one?
You know, when you're actually talking about this, I'm remembering Nelson Mandela. And one time, one of my spiritual mentors, Dadi Janki, was saying that Nelson Mandela had this amazing, amazing ability to forgive. That his number one outstanding, I mean, it shines above everyone else that she knows, is his ability to forgive. And forgive in a way that, you know, he lost most of his life. He was sitting in prison, he did all of that, but he was still able to forgive. And that forgiveness was actually what she said was holding the world. And so in this case, with Hitler or any of these people, I think our forgiveness of what has happened in the past is what is going to make us move forward into a better society as a world.
Well, there's a way, I guess, of distinguishing between revenge and justice, right? And they're both legal ways to make that distinction, and there are moral ways to make that distinction. But in either case, forgiveness has its own very difficult path to walk. In the case of Mandela in South Africa, there was forgiveness and the Truth and Reconciliation Commission and whatever other structures of legal recourse that there might have been. How do you make those kinds of distinctions when you talk about trying to get to forgiveness, but also trying to see to it that justice is done? And I mean this in a big way, like with Hitler. But I think in the smallest ways, when someone has wronged you and there is a justice that needs to be delivered on top of whatever forgiveness it is that you want to deliver.
I feel actually both of them are mutually exclusive.
Which two? Forgiveness and justice?
Forgiveness and justice.
Wow.
In that your consciousness is of forgiveness, is of going past, of making sure that you have nothing but love for the person. But also, on the other hand, justice is about making sure that that doesn't happen to you again. And so, like any power, you cannot take a power and use it solely in its own way. Like, you can't just use the power to adjust in your life. There are times when you have to use the power to face. There are times when you have to use the power of truth. And that's what I mean by mutually exclusive, is you can use both the powers. You can use the power to adjust when you have to forgive, and you can use your power of truth and say, this is what is truth, and I have to stand by, this is what is truth.
So you're essentially summoning something else in the moment to deal with the question of justice, but it isn't in the power to accommodate.
Yes, it isn't in the power to accommodate. The power to accommodate, more than anything else, it really brings benefit to the self. It is what keeps me sane. That actually it's my own sanity I'm looking after when I treat the other person's dignity as my own dignity. Because little things like that, if I get irritated, if I reject someone, if I'm sure that they, if I don't want to be with someone, if I'm talking about their mistakes, those things actually take me away from my path of happiness. And so I have to make sure that I do not do that, because I'm losing my happiness. No one else is doing it. I'm losing my happiness. And there is really joy in treating the other person's mistake as my own mistake and not talking about it, even though initially it might seem difficult. There's actually, in the long run, there's a lot of joy in that.
Now, when you say treating it as your own mistake, am I hearing you correctly to mean that, not that you then start thinking, well, I was the one who did this, but much more that you think, well, I've made a mistake like that before, and the way I would rather see that treated is this way.
Right. You won't talk about it. A, you won't go into the expansion of it. B, you know, with that person. C, you wouldn't be thinking about it too much. You know, you're a little bit more lenient with yourself, and so you're lenient with the other person too. So all of these things come into play when you... So it's not necessarily I'm that bad, or you take ownership of that mistake, but you are able to treat it in a way that you have made that mistake.
Well, what I'm about to describe wouldn't fall within the power to accommodate. My question, I guess, would be, is there one within which it would fall? When you've done something, and we'll call it a mistake for the sake of this conversation, but maybe I did it absolutely intentionally knowing that it would cause you a pain or cause you a problem, and now you've decided to accommodate that. Isn't there some benefit at some point to parsing it, to doing exactly the thing the power to accommodate suggests you don't do, which is to stop for a minute and let's look at this thing that you've done? Because ultimately, if we spend time now talking about it, thinking about it, parsing it, pulling it apart, that we increase the chances that you won't do it again, and we'll learn from it and move on. Where does that fall, if at all?
You know, I was a few years ago, I was reading how some of the top athletes improve their game. They don't, apparently they videotape their game, and they don't focus on the mistakes they've made. They focus on what is it that they have done right, and they keep watching it. They keep watching it, because that's what they want to reinforce in their head. And I want to share a story about Dadi Gulzar. Dadi Gulzar is one of our spiritual resources of the Brahma Kumaris, and she's absolutely magical, lovely lady. And so one day in our headquarters in Mount Abu, we were sitting, and someone came, and he wasn't exactly happy about things. He looked a little cantankerous and very mean to everyone around, and he was showing his unhappiness and displeasure with everyone around. And so the first thing that they looked at him and said is, oh, you look so sweet. You're so sweet and happy. And Dadi has this ability where everyone just kind of behaves on their best behavior when they see her. And so as soon as she said that, he just really, at that point I was thinking, I don't see an ounce of sweetness in this person. But I wasn't going to say anything. And so as soon as she said that, then he started smiling, he started behaving differently, he started doing all of those things. She's, of course, a very spiritually advanced person. I mean, has been doing this for 75 years. And so she's a very spiritually advanced person, and she has that ability that when she looks at the best in someone, actually that best in that person emerges. And so in to answer your question, maybe we have been going at it wrong. Maybe we shouldn't be talking about it and parsing it. Maybe if I sit here and look at the best in that person, more long-lasting changes will happen.
And give it back to that person. Feed it back to that
person. Yeah, and feed it back to that person when they did it.
Which does require a sort of an elevated sense of, I don't know, you used the word love, but some sort of benevolence aimed at the other person. Often in a moment when that's the last thing you feel like providing.
Right.
So like the power to tolerate, where giving in that case is trying to figure out what the person most needs right now rather than responding to the negative feelings that they're directing at you. You give something very counterintuitive to them. In this case, finding what you think is the best in them, because they may not be showing you much good at all, just like the guy you've just described. How does she find the sweetness?
I don't know. It must be magical. It must be her magic. I don't know how she found it. But the thing I was thinking is actually everyone does have goodness, that, and it's our perception. And so if I change my perception of that person, maybe he will start showing some goodness. You know, if I don't see something, right? If I'm not expected to see something, I recently saw a thing on YouTube where people were playing and said how many passes the ball had. And then there was this bear going through.
Right.
And no one noticed the bear till they said, what happened to the bear? So if I start noticing these things, maybe they will become apparent.
If you start finding, even in the moment, the less visible good qualities.
Yeah, because I really, more than in the moment, I think what happens is we keep bringing the past into the present. You know, if someone just did something bad one time, it's very easy to move on. But if they keep doing it is when you keep really getting worked up about it. And so what we do is we bring the past into the present, we keep bringing the past into the present. And so that's what my effort has to be, not to mix the past into the present.
Well, that's, again, that by itself is a trick, to remind yourself to leave things behind. Another power that we've dealt with earlier, and to be able to let go.
Right.
Allow things to go back to where they belong in the past. And it would seem that you are trying to summon all of these powers pretty much in the moment. How do you build the muscle to do that?
Like I said, for me, it is this connection with the divine. That's how I build my muscle. And to really become that, to become like Nelson Mandela or the Dalai Lama or Christ, there has to be that connection with the divine, and that's what builds the muscle.
Well, if I haven't found my way there, is it a hopeless cause then?
No, I didn't say there are three grades, right? So the first two grades are possible without that connection with the divine. You can adjust and you can do all of those things. So it's only the third one where you really, it's like if you want to go to graduate school, then you have to go to the right schools and do the right things.
There are a lot of different faiths deliver the same message in a lot of different ways. But all of them suggest that there's something intrinsic in the human being that will get them there, that is physical and mortal,
right,
within the self. There's an even higher level within the higher level that you can achieve?
Actually, all of our qualities, like love and peace and power to adjust, all of it is intrinsic within every soul, every individual. It's intrinsic. But to be able to pull it out of you, you need something more, deeper. So the first few, you can sit in your original nature, you are, be aware of it, and then you're able to do it. But as you go along into the power to accommodate into its ultimate state, then you need someone higher to really pull it out of you. Because you're not, your humility here is that you're following God. He's asking you to do it, and you're doing it. And also your humility is here is that you are being His instrument. And so you have to be in a manner that is conducive for both of you. And so all of those things happen in that higher state, so it's very essential for that.
So the power to accommodate, go with the flow, forgive and forget, and ultimately to put yourself into a position where you accept that my mistake is your mistake. And let it go. Thank you, and thank you, Shireen.
Thank you.